This interview is with Jim Backus, a past president of the Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater. This taping is being produced in Moorhead State University's recording studio. The interviewer is June Dobrovich, representing the Heritage Education Commission. Well, Jim, it's good to see you again after so many years. We don't see each other as often as we might, being in the same city. I know you're a many talented talented type man. You've got lots of talents. Would you like to tell me where in that long past you first developed your interest for theater?
I think it was college. I think it was in the old agricultural college, what we used to call the Cow College, June. And I really lay a lot of it to Mr. Arvold, and I think a lot of people in the community would feel the same way. I had some activity in high school, cantatas and student talent evenings and that sort of thing. My brother and I were very interested. And my brother went to Concordia, and there was a woman who was kind of the Mrs. Arvold, if you please, of the Concordia campus. And she guided my brother Don, who was quite active, theatrically speaking, in Concordia. I went to the NDSU, once the NDAC, largely because of Dr. Putnam, who had ranged over the state. I was a graduate of Jamestown High School, and he was there recruiting for the Gold Star Band. And it interested poor boys because, as you remember, the U.S. Army paid for what was called the incidental fees. Mm-hmm. It was possible to get a uniform which kept poor students warm. And also Dr. Putnam was helpful in getting jobs for musical students. And in due course of time, I, as you did too, got acquainted with Professor Arvold. Yes. And he really stimulated, I think, a lot of people. When I look back to the talent that I had, that I saw in the old Festival Hall from 1933 until 1937, my time at the college, I'm really staggered to think what Mr. Arvold could just pick up the phone and call Sol Hurok, you remember, the great impresario in New York, and get Helen Traubel and Lawrence Tibbett and the Russian Ballet Chorus, Ballet Russe, and half a dozen other terrific names, internationally known names, who would come several times, actually. Yes. The great black baritone,
Robeson.
Paul Robeson was there several times.
Yes.
Before he fell into difficulties, you know, unfairly probably with the government. And Mr. Arvold also had a feeling that it didn't have to be highly professional. It didn't have to be for the professional theater. It could be self-expression.
That's right.
And I feel that a lot of people have forgotten about what he contributed in the way of saying, so maybe it's rough, and so maybe it's amateur, and so maybe it isn't going to make Broadway. But if it brings out what's in you, that will be a benefit. And it'll be a benefit for the community. And that has proven to be, because there are people still actively, you might say, in fine arts, his graduates, and who contributed a great deal to making people more self-expressive, more self-assertive. And he really, I think, contributed something. It's hard to measure, you know, in bricks and mortar, but it's very important, I think, in retrospect. And he also gave my brother and I, when we were graduated, letters to friends of his in the Pasadena Playhouse. And my brother, in Los Angeles, was in the little theater movement and had aspirations, you know, for the stage and for the movies, and was making some progress in that way. And both he and I think, had our careers cut short by the war, because he decided to join the Air Force, and I could see a war was coming, and both of us enlisted. And after the war was over in 1946, I think there was a budding development of little theater movement in Fargo-Moorhead.
A real need, because as you know, FMCT had its beginnings in 1946. And of course, what you've been saying about Mr. Arvold, I'll be saying in my interview, words that certainly are the same. I feel he certainly is due more recognition than he's getting at the present time.
To some degree, his contributions have been forgotten, or at least kind of languished. But it's, I think that his, I'm thinking of Clark Fredrickson, for example, at Davenport, North Dakota, you know, a graduate, and who went ahead and became a professional, went back by choice, you know, to his home community, and has done a great deal. His influence has spread all over Cass County.
Yes.
In ways that we don't know, you know, we do not quite understand. But there was a lively feeling that something should be done in 1946, and of course, there was Aubrey Hook, who was new to Fargo and had been actively, you know, and there was it in the Omaha Theater.
Yes.
Who had a lot of graduates. The Omaha Theater had professional graduates, you know, who were making a name for themselves.
Well, we were very lucky to have an Aubrey Hook, certainly, at the beginning of our theater. Jim, could I push you ahead just a little bit to ask you at what time you became involved with our local theater, our FMCT?
Really simultaneous, I think, pretty much with Aubrey's interest and with your interest. Because there was a group that got the legalisms done. And it seems to me...
Bangert. Harold Bangert.
We got together and... I think my name is second or third on the official legal corporate paper.
Yes.
There must be a corporation paper around
somewhere. Yes, I think
in
there
the archives.
Is. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether that'd be second or third, but Don Bishop was there, perhaps you were there, Aubrey was there. And out of that, there was a lot of enthusiasm for its first production, you remember.
Oh, yes.
A lot of people got interested.
My sister Eileen.
And you probably remember some of the cast members.
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah. I certainly do. Gene Hoverson, Schnell. Oh, yes. Ann Diamond. I remember a lot of them.
Was there a Paul
Ebert?
Ebert.
Yes, who is still at the Tennessee Theater in Oak Ridge.
I see.
Uh-huh.
Well, there were many meetings, and I remember the time. I'm not sure in whose home, but there was a time when we signed the corporate papers and became... an entity, the Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater,
That's
guess.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And then it became, I suppose, a business of keeping it alive financially.
Administratively, you helped us. You were a president. In what year or years was that?
I was the third president, I guess, or the second president behind. I can't recall precisely where Don had a year.
I think Don
presidency.
Was in there, yes. Aubrey, then Don, then perhaps
I think
you.
That's the, I think that's the procedure. And the big problem, of course, was where to stage and and how to raise some funds. And that led into some extra activities in addition to the three or four plays that we decided on the second year to have.
And, of course, there's where we tapped into your writing abilities. And I'd like to have you tell me or tell us what some of those were, Jim.
Well, we saw, I think, quite soon that the public was ready for some live theater, whether it was sketches or whether it was a cabaret or whether it was... almost a blackout, whether it was some form of theater, the local community was ready, and tickets could be sold. And I'm thinking, for example, of a first one of the first ones that we had, which was Theater 59, which was one that was more a full-dressed cabaret, theater cabaret, which was held in the Fargo Elks Club. The problem was to use a gymnasium or use a social service club or in some way to find a place to hold our productions beyond renting a theater or renting a school. It was a problem to find a place that would let us set up and wouldn't insist that we knock down immediately after the final production.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Theater cabaret was an extra, as I recall, something to earn additional monies.
That's right.
As I recall, the first years were pretty good monetarily, considering our very meager budget. But by 59, weren't we having more financial difficulties?
There were real financial problems. We soon went to a subscription system, you'll mm-hmm. remember. And it seemed to me that we chose four productions, did we not? It seemed to be what we could accomplish. And we used various places to set, to write, to make the set and to set it up. We used schools in Moorhead. We used what was left of a community, kind of an auditorium at the foot of Broadway. You remember that I think when the war broke out, the city contributed to Hector Airport an enormous community building that held Ice Capades type mm-hmm. shows. That was sawed in half and moved to Hector Airport, leaving a kind of a strange concrete
the facade form, of the
facade
building,
or
wasn't
the frontage.
It? Mm-hmm.
And later on, that was made available by the Park District to the theater. And Mr. and Mrs. Oliver, you remember, who were directors, co-directors in a way, mm-hmm. Lived there. And it offered a place to rehearse and it offered a place to make sets. Then those sets had to be moved to Moorhead or to various places where we would decide to hold our productions. I imagine that there must be somewhere a record of the many theaters and places we've used. We used some of the lodges in town. We used the actual facade that I mentioned there at the foot of Broadway for a series of blackout productions, and we used the Elks Club.
Remember that church across the street from the courthouse, too. Do you recall that?
Yes, we used several churches. Mm-hmm. There was a church on 3rd or 4th Avenue North, west mm-hmm. of 8th Street, west of 9th. It's been subsequently torn down, but that particular mm-hmm. Church offered a place where we could stage. Mm-hmm. But it was difficult to, that was the problem, and I think a lot of us were thinking of a community theater building long before we were successful in getting it started.
Long before we had the money, actually.
Yes, indeed. I think that some of the things that Aubrey and some of the things that Mrs. Hook said after Aubrey's untimely death was that we should have a home, we should have a theater, we should go after the community and get its support. And but we didn't have any lapses. We didn't have any time when we did not have a theater series. And I think when you think that this is, what, about the 35th?
It has to be 46th, yes. Mm-hmm. We're about 2 years away from a big celebration.
It's remarkable, like. Really, mm-hmm. that we didn't have a lapse.
Speaking of those early days, Jim, you mentioned the Olivers, but I think of Marvin Hannibal, who certainly, along with Aubrey and the rest of the leadership on the board at that time, gave us a very solid start. Not so much in terms of money, perhaps, as in terms of community support. Would you say a few things about community support?
Well, I think it was extraordinary, really. When Marvin, for example, first came to Fargo, all directors, I'm not sure whether we got him through the National Community Theater Organization or not, just how he was recruited. But when he came, he really managed through the generosity and the charity of the people who were interested in the theater. I know he lived in a number of homes for a while, did he not?
Yes.
And because, like most directors, he didn't have a great deal of resources.
No, he was just out of school from the University of Minnesota, as I recall.
And he had... He really depended on the charity and the generosity mm-hmm. of local people, which was considerable.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, he was able, I think, to after we paid him a very modest salary.
Indeed.
He was able to set up, privately, mm-hmm. and he really worked incessantly. He did a great deal. I'm pretty sure the community will never realize the hours that he put in, because he certainly was in costume, he certainly mm-hmm. was in set design, he certainly was in lighting.
There was no staff in those days.
No, and he was director. He was everything, mm-hmm. you see, in addition to a pretty good volunteer group mm-hmm. who built those sets, mm-hmm. who a good deal of design. I'm thinking of Don, and I'm thinking of Paul
Earhart
and mm-hmm. his wife,
mm-hmm.
and other people who worked many, many nights as volunteers and did it year after year.
Yes, and many of those people on both sides of the footlights, as you
yes.
indeed yourself did. We've talked a lot about people who administratively and were our board members and certainly the backbone of the theater. There are some actors and actresses who stand out in my mind, not only the Earharts, but some others in that period. Can you recall some of those?
It was amazing, I think, and I do hark back to the Little Country Theater generating, interest in part of those people who stayed in Fargo. But I'm thinking of the people who came down from, who were professional people in town, like Ernie Van Vlissingen, who contributed various kinds of musical supervision. I'm thinking of Lloyd Collins, who also was a professional in town but contributed. I'm thinking of the Earharts. I'm thinking of John McDonough, who still is active in the Fargo-Moorhead Opera. He was a lighting expert and is today. I'm thinking of Beverly Halbison Blanage, and I'm thinking of Nancy Owens. I'm thinking, of course, of Frank Scott. I'm thinking of Verna Newell and John Kittleson, and I'm thinking of Manny Margette and Peggy Amath and Shirley and John Tilton, who are sure to be mentioned on other tapes. And I'm thinking of George Nassif and his wife, Kenny Jones, and a good many people who had gotten a start through Mr. Arvold. The extra things that we did to raise additional money in addition to the subscription, we got, I think, better at it. And I wrote really a great many sketches and sometimes as part of these extra cabaret things, sometimes just for the fun of the directors. I can remember doing small things when we had an annual meeting, small things that were amusing, it kind of made an annual business meeting. And
kept
of course,
it up a little.
Yes, and I'm thinking then, of course, the time came when Frank Scott and I, and with Mr. and Mrs. Oliver, decided that it was time to do a musical. Now, I had never done a musical, and I wanted to see if it were possible for, you know, to write, to do a musical, to write the libretto, and to write a good deal of the music. I didn't have professional music training, but I depended a good deal on Frank Scott, who was an employee of WDAY Radio at the time. And, of course, his name will bob up again and again in these histories because of his career. But we decided that it might be timely, and this was in 1952, to attempt a musical. And so I wrote a libretto, a script called West is the Land. West is the Land. It was in two acts, and it had 16 songs, and it had a ballet, and it had full arrangements for a pit orchestra done by Frank. And it was a rousing success.
It certainly was. I have a hard time staying quiet at some of these intervals when I can go back as far as you can.
We were played in the junior high school,
Ben Franklin. Yes.
And we had hoped to do, I think, two or three nights, and we actually did eight. We had some amazing things happen. The audience reaction was so pleasing that the people behind the scenes, such as Paul and the people in the box office, were just absolutely amazed. I can recall I was working at WDAY Radio, and they called from the music store around the corner. That would be, which music store would that be?
Around the corner from
WDAY.
Oh, DeVoe's?
It would certainly be DeVoe's.
DeVoe's.
Mr. DeVoe called me and said, my store is full of people demanding tickets for the second performance of this musical that the theater is putting on. And these people are standing near my pianos, and I don't want them standing or leaning on my pianos. And the lady who was supposed to come and sell tickets is evidently not here. And I said, what do you want me to do, Mr. DeVoe? He was pretty angry.
Mm-hmm.
And also he had a very angry George Black, who there demanding a whole string of tickets for his friends, I guess, and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know anything else to do but go over there. So I went over there, and fortunately the safe was open, and the ticket box of tickets and money was, I was able to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we sold out the second performance in a few minutes and got the customers away from Mr. DeVoe's piano, and satisfied Mr. Black. Mr. George Black, of course, was well known in the community, but he had a terrible temper sometimes, and he was really raging that he couldn't get these tickets. Well, it was a sellout performance, and finally, when the cast was completely exhausted, we decided at the eighth performance to give it up. The next year, then, in 1953, we did Show Goes the Nation, which was also a musical written by myself and Frank Scott, which also was a success. It was more topical. West of the Land had gotten into some Red River Valley history.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one reason that the audiences loved it was that it did touch some of the historical things, and it also had a terrific cast. Manny Marquette and Beverly Halbeis and Blanage, and some of the fine singers from the campuses.
Mm-hmm.
We were really in luck that it was that it had some fine music who could sing what we had written. And
I wonder, before we get too far away from that, because I've always thought this, I really do wish, now that, is Frank Scott also retired?
Yes, Frank isn't retired. He does some things, and he's coming back.
Coming back,
you know, in a few weeks.
But
he still, I think, has an interest in Fargo-Moorhead.
Well, you know, there have been so many things revived. At the present moment, certainly history and people's backgrounds and the history of the Red River Valley is so important. Of course, that's the work of our Heritage Commission. And I love to see this show revived here in town. I think it could, we certainly still have much talent to draw from. We have better facilities now for doing it. I would like it if we could do a revival of that sort.
Well, it certainly would be possible. It was a play in two acts with one set and the backdrop scene. It was designed for amateur productions. And after the community theater did it, a high school in Mandan did it, a high school in Detroit Lakes did it, and both, there were other high schools, as I remember, who did it. We didn't charge, and in a couple of instances, Frank and I went, we were the visiting, we're the visiting creators.
Celebrities.
Celebrities, if you please. Mm-hmm. It seemed to me that we went to Mandan and that we went to Detroit Lakes. But the thing had some relationship to the fact that the territory had become a state and that the Wells Fargo Express had some romance about it. Mm-hmm. But it was designed so that high school casts could do it. Mm-hmm. And it was it touched, I think, some of the historical recollections. And then we did The Show Goes the Nation, which had to do with the election. General Eisenhower was then being considered, and based generally on that, we had a topical musical, which again was a success. In and Frank and I discovered that we could do it, and that it seemed to please audiences.
It certainly was an audience pleaser. You're right there, Jim. There's got to have been a lot of satisfaction for you over the years in the various ways that you have supported and helped the theater with your talents and your time. Any high points? Any particular time when you there was some satisfaction that perhaps was greatest?
I think that I was glad to see at the time in when Fargo became an all-American town. I know that you were involved in that. It was a variety review that the people of Fargo and Moorhead supported nicely. It was in 1960 when Fargo became an all-American town. And reasons, I think, some of the reasons that it was a winning all-America town with a rating that meant a lot to the community, I think, at that time. It was, you recall, it was one of those national competitions when Fargo-Moorhead, Fargo, competed with towns of the similar size all over the country. And there was a good deal of satisfaction when it was honored. And there was, in the auditorium on February 27th, 1960, there was a kind of a citizen salute. And I see that you were involved. The production was staged by W.T. Chichester, who was from NDAC at the time. I see that you were involved in that production. And there was the choreography was done by Mrs. Blanage. And Byron Gackle was an assistant director, and the orchestrations were done by Dr. Harmon, Dr. H.D. Harmon, a well-known Moorhead citizen. It was, in a way, it kind of gave a push to thinking of a theater of our own, and it also kind of said to us that we had made some progress, you know.
And utilized the talents, apparently, of a number of the arts groups in Fargo, which certainly is a strong point for the city to this day.
I think so. This particular production It called on Ken Kennedy, a name that people remember, Dr. Vincent Dodge, Tom Humphrey, Elsie Sorlene, Mrs. A.W. Shepinus, William Arnold, Mr. Van Vlissingen, Manny Marquette. There were many groups, bands, choruses conducted by C.A. Ellis and Elsie Sorlene. There was productions by the Hal Bison School of Dance. And it kind of said that we, in a way, had maybe come of age in fine arts and should go ahead.
Yes. Well, this has all been very interesting. I think you have given a lot of names, spoken of many events which certainly have made our city grow in terms of the arts area. And I do want to thank you a lot, Jim, for coming down and talking to me today. This is an interesting concept that we have of trying to get on tape all of the history of each of these groups, and you have certainly helped us a great deal to accomplish that.
Well, I was glad to be considered, and thank you.
Well, you're certainly welcome.